Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
As mentioned, the last 24 hours certainly needs us to continue to zone into the big news story of the week and potentially the month. So far on our economic calendar, we saw the postponement of the national budget speech just yesterday. There's been many a headline that has been shared regarding the political aspect when we look at the concerns and cracks in the relationship of the GNU, coupled with that, the economic aspect of things. But tonight we continue to zone into the matter at hand, which was the proposed increase of 2% in value-added tax, moving the rate from 15% to 17%. Bear in mind, as this is typically or was going to be tabled in the budget speech, it would still need to be passed and, of course, then implemented in the next fiscal year, largely taking place in the next year. But we thought we'd go back to understanding that 101. Not only taking a look at how it works, how it's calculated, and how we fare against our international counterparts, with a guest who joined us last night, Lance Callop. Hopefully the technical gremlins are out of the system to make sure we can hear Lance tonight. And of course, we'll take a look at what it means for you and I when it comes to our pockets. The average food basket, what impact and influence would it have on the final amount that we pay from an inflationary point of view? We start this conversation with Lance Callop. He's a leading tax expert and founder of Callop Tax Collective, followed by a conversation with Mervyn Abrams, a program coordinator from the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group, essentially helping us understand many of the metrics they often put together, looking at the basic food items South Africans purchase. But Lance, let's start off with you. Good evening to you both, gentlemen. And Lance, last night we were disrupted by the rain and the poor technical connection. I'm hoping that it's a lot clearer tonight. But let's just go back to VAT. Many have actually commented to say that VAT is an effective way of collecting tax for the South African Revenue Service. But help us contextualize this in comparison to other forms of tax that we have in South Africa.
Good evening to you and your listeners, and thank you for having me on the show this evening. Awesome. I hope that you can hear me clearly.
Loud and clear. A lot better. Thank you. No fault of your own.
No. You know, so the VAT is a very effective means of collecting tax. And why that is, it's because you tend to have big corporates who are behind the collections and who pay those amounts promptly over to SARS each and every month. And then, of course, after that is the pay-as-you-earn mechanism, which, you know, which is also a very effective means of tax collection, far more so than any other means of tax collection. So those are really the two most efficient means of tax collection. Mm-hmm. And the minister, for various reasons, went with a 2% increase in the VAT rate. Well, at least that's what was proposed.
Mm-hmm. And maybe let's contextualize this, Lance. You mentioned last night that South Africa does have one of the lowest VAT rates in the world. I have taken a look at several other countries, and you're very right. You look at the likes of Egypt, we're in line with their performance of VAT at about 14%. Hungary sits at 25%. Argentina, Australia at 21%. Then you get countries like Bermuda and a few other, the British Isles and Guernsey, where they don't have VAT at all. And as we understand, are typically known for being tax safe havens. Help us contextualize the numbers, because the VAT rate also needs to be indicative of the performance of the economy, coupled with its size and the capabilities to ensure that VAT is a viable option for revenue collection.
Yes, 100%. And I've been advocating for many years now that, and many others have been for that matter, because the evidence is quite clear that our VAT rate has been far too low and is still far too low, but not in isolation, because on the other hand, our corporate income tax rate is far too high. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this has persisted for many, many years, when many countries were dropping their corporate tax rates to almost an equivalent rate, you know, of VAT. And there's been a little bit of a reversal of that post-COVID, but not much. You know, I mean, I think the UK's maybe gone back up to 25%. And so at a bare minimum, any increase in the VAT rate should be coupled with the reduction in the corporate income tax rate. And that sounds very bizarre. Mm-hmm. Sounds bizarre, but you know, there's a lot of economic substance behind that, and I'm not an economist.
Sure.
But the main problem with increasing VAT as I've said, they didn't increase. They weren't going to decrease the corporate income tax rate. But you cannot raise the VAT rate when there's no growth.
Got you. And that's been the issue of contention, right? Many economists essentially saying this is the concern, especially given the fact that our economic performance has not been in line with our expectations that do substantiate an increase in VAT. I'm keen for you just to take us further into this argument to fully distill, you know, what then are the other alternatives that we should consider?
Yes. And then maybe if I can just add as well that a change in the VAT rate, whether it's an increase or a decrease, comes with an immense burden for companies. Last time the rate was changed, it was effective from April of that year. So in other words, you have a month and a half. And, you know, systems changes, the complex time of supply rules in VAT, it creates a lot of complexity and admin burden for companies.
Got you.
So I think from that perspective, you know, there's also, you know, companies across the board are also struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Less admin is, you know, is better.
Got you. Lots
coming
of,
back.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, sorry. I was going to say what, you know, the other thing that the other low-hanging fruit is simply not to adjust the tax brackets. So we all know what that means is that.
So manage our revenue and then keep our revenue, but manage our costs is essentially what you're alluding to.
Well, I'm talking about us as individuals where, you know, the brackets go up until a certain point, and what they would normally do is adjust that for inflation every year. Mm. Last year, there was no adjustment, and they could just do the same this year as well. And that would also go quite a long way to plug the so effectively, in real terms, we are paying more tax year on year as individuals, even though the rate hasn't necessarily increased.
Mm. That, too, would hurt us in our pockets as South Africans, because, boy, have we been feeling the strain there, Lance, even with inflation easing slightly. I'll ask you to stay on the line for just a moment. I do want to get back to you with a few other questions. But as you've alluded to, if we saw an increase in the personal income tax, South Africans would have seen pressure coming through there, despite the fact that it is an effective alternative that could have been considered. Bear in mind that when you're looking at a few articles that have also been shared by SARS, much of the commentary by the commissioner, Edward Kiesvetter, is the fact that their expectations regarding tax collection have also fallen short because of a reduction in the collection of the fuel levy. And put this into context, the fuel levy, as we know, is charged on fuel. And for many businesses and even households, we had a heightened level of diesel consumption in the last year, largely because of load shedding on the back of Eskom. But since Eskom has been able to keep the lights on, that fuel levy bill is not as high. So that also speaks to another shortfall in terms of the expectations regarding revenue collection, just for some insight. But let's bring it back to our pockets. And this is where Mervin Abrahams of the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group joins us now for more. Mervin, good evening and welcome. When we typically speak to you, it always has to do with the basket of food, essentially, that South Africans do purchase. And that helps us understand not only the inflationary impact and cost to our pocket as South Africans, but gives us some context within the economic metrics, population size, average income, and of course, how this also speaks to the demographics, the different outcomes and financial performance, I guess, of different racial groups. But first things first, Mervin, what does a VAT increase, proposed VAT increase, mean for the pockets of consumers when it comes to buying basic goods?
So good evening, and good evening to all your viewers. So it effectively means that we will be paying 2% more on everything that is bought in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it be our electricity bill will increase by 2%, that's without, of course, the Eskom tariff that will come into effect. Our municipal rates bills, I mean, our municipal services, water, food, clothing. So just about everything will increase by a further 2%. So all South Africans will feel that. In particular, those with the least amount of income will feel it more because, of course, their margins are smaller or bigger. Mm-hmm. And so a 2% is a greater portion of, say, 2,000 Rand than it is of 20,000 Rand. So that's essentially it. Every South African will pay more for everything they buy. Mm.
And this is the concern, right, that we know many at the table have brought to the fore. When we look at your numbers, inflation has been cooling. We have seen that there's been access to the likes of Two-Pot, which have provided more funding into the pockets of consumers who chose to withdraw. How would this essentially then shift the numbers and the metrics that you typically compile regarding not only our minimum wage scenarios, but even more so just the average South African income and their spend on household goods?
So essentially, I mean, a 2% increase will have an inflationary effect. In the sense that of course we pay more for exactly the same amount of goods with exactly the same amount of input costs. But if I could just take you to our food basket. So the food basket that we track on a monthly basis, constructed for a household of seven, we track these numbers across the country, and the basket was set up by women in working class. So it reflects the working class and poor households in terms of what they would purchase each month. Now, out of that 44 foods, 22 of those foods are already VAT exempt.
Yes, that's the likes of maize meal, right? Got you. Dried beans.
Yes, so that would be your likes of maize meal. It would be the likes of your fresh vegetables. It would involve milk and such foods, which are already VAT exempt. And the 22 foods that are not VAT exempt, that's in our basket. So when we look at the end of January, for instance, we would see that the amount of VAT payable on that 22 foods was 331 Rand and 2 cents. Now, if this 17% was implemented last month, then it would have translated in a further 44 Rand and 14 cents being paid for VAT, and the VAT bill on that 22 foods would have increased to 375 Rand and 16 cents. So that would then take the VAT portion on our basket to somewhere near about just over 2 to 3, almost close to 3% of the overall cost of that basket.
And that's excluding inflation, I'm assuming.
Sorry, excluding?
Would that exclude average inflation, as we see having an impact on our basket?
Yes, that's without the inflationary pressure on the basket at all. That is purely what is would be paid in VAT. That's the VAT component of that basket. The inflationary component of that basket is about 1.2%, but we have disaggregated that away from the VAT. So when we're talking about a 44 Rand and 14 cents increase in VAT, that's the 2%. For a household that lives on a national minimum wage, who are already underspending on food, according to our calculation, by almost 40%, it is quite a massive amount of money. And so we are convinced that it would have a negative impact in terms of household food security. It would have a negative impact in terms of poverty alleviation. Because let us not forget that the VAT is not only on food. Mm. So we might get the minister did speak about expanding the basket of zero rated, yes, VAT. But that relates to food. So what about this children's school shoes? What about electricity bills? What about potentially transport? What about all those other factors that will not be captured in the zero-rated basket. And when you look at that and you compare it in terms of the percentage-wise that your low-income households will spend, then it is quite clear that the greatest burden of resolving our budget deficit will fall on the lowest income households in South Africa. So the poor in South Africa will have to rescue South Africa from the budget deficit. And that for us is really a problematic area.
I'm so glad you alluded to the expansion of the zero-rated items because, as you say, we typically focus on food, but not the additional services and products that we also pay VAT on. What I'm keen to ask, I guess, the both of you for this question, we can continue to start with yourself, Mervin, and Lance, feel free to add your thoughts. What if we used a sliding scale of VAT? Markets like India typically do that where perhaps on this quote-unquote syntax products, alcohol and tobacco, there's a higher percentage of VAT that is charged versus the zero-rated items that they might have or goods and services that have a lower rate of VAT. Is a sliding scale an option at all when it comes to VAT? Mervin?
So a sliding scale is possible. In fact, what a sliding scale will do, it will make VAT less regressive, because that's another issue around value-added tax, is it is regressive in nature. You know, everybody pays exactly the same. Everybody will still pay exactly the same, but the expenditure for that is generally bought by your wealthier citizens, that of course we can pay more VAT on. So we would be supportive of something like that. However, business would object to that for an issue that Lance had raised. It does complicate the collection of VAT. So one of the areas for VAT is it simplicity, in a sense. It's the same amount paid on everything, paid by everyone, which makes the collection and the implementation and the administration of the tax so much simpler. But a sliding scale on certain goods would better reflect, for instance, a protection of the poor than just a zero-rated basket.
Got you. Lance?
I may just add in there also, I mean, agree that it's possible in principle, but the Revenue Authority would really battle to audit, you know, companies, VAT affairs, if you have all these different types of rates. Whereas at a uniform rate, it's quite easy to look at income and say, okay, well, your VAT should be 15% of that, right? Mm-hmm. But if you just aggregated that, I mean, if you think about, let's take a macro, for example, where they sell many, many different types of things. And so you find that, you know, you also open the door for, you know, rather devious behavior. Simplicity is often the best approach. And that is regressive in that sense. And that's why I can't stress enough, you know, a higher rate of VAT. VAT is by far the most buoyant tax. And what that means is that it responds more than any other type of tax to an increase in GDP. So in other words, if GDP goes up by 100 Rand, VAT collections you would expect to go up by 15. Actually, VAT collections go up by more than 15.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, Lance, this isn't such a bad move, but the challenge is that our economy is weak and can't sustain sustainable revenue collection from VAT.
You need the growth and then the higher VAT rate makes a lot of sense. But in a low growth, you know, high unemployment environment, it's really just very, very difficult and bitter pill to swallow, I guess. And you know, I think the reality in this country is that, you know, the point was made that the poor are being or will be, you know, having to carry the burden of the deficit. And it must be said that that is already the case.
Gotcha.
You know, if you think about the you know, the low level employees in all these companies, mm-hmm. who are forced to pay their tax every month, who are forced to pay their VAT every month, and you know, those are the people who are really carrying the country. That has to be said.
100%. Mervin, let's hear your closing remarks. We have a few weeks to go before the 12th of March. If you could whisper into the ears of National Treasury, what would your recommendations be?
So my recommendations would be that we look at other instruments. We all agree, I think as a country, we all agree we have to cover the deficit. I think most of us would agree that perhaps the worst option would be to continue borrowing. So some other mechanisms would be needed. And we would put on the table something that Lance might totally disagree with me. but it's the sacred cow that you cannot increase corporate income tax. Mm. We are of the opinion that actually there is room for the potential increase of corporate tax. Without companies fleeing, I mean, of course, they will protest and they will threaten to flee.
And by how much?
Anyone would do that. So I mean, if we increase corporate tax by something like 2%, we still won't make the budget deficit, but it would be a step in that direction. And we have to look at how can we also cut at some expenditure, but not expenditure that relates to efficient service delivery. So in other areas of the state, where is it possible to cut expenditure? Now, I can't give you an exact figure other than saying that perhaps we have too many politicians and they have too many benefits for which the ordinary citizen has to pay. But of course, that also won't raise enough to cover the deficit. But it's in looking at a basket of other types of things, I think would be a measure of confidence for citizens that government truly are committed to get us into an economy that can grow and create more jobs.
I like where you're taking this conversation, Mervin. But Lance, I can't let you go without sharing your reply specifically to the increase in corporate taxes.
Bankley, I get to have the last word, as lucky to have it. So, I mean, you know, I'm actually a corporate tax person, advisor predominantly, and so to me, a higher corporate tax, would be more business for me. But the reality is that corporate income tax is by far the least significant means of revenue collection. It comes in at about 16% of total taxes collected, compared to VAT at about 27% and mm-hmm. personal income tax at about 40%. And, you know, the numbers on corporate income tax are quite staggering, because about 100 companies account for 90% of all corporate income tax revenue. Mm. So it's an incredibly small tax base. And you know, if you increase taxes, then the companies will just, you know, look at more fancy ways to lower that effective tax rate after all. And you know, it's also far less buoyant than VAT. So what that means is, bizarrely, you know, if GDP increases by 100, you would expect corporate income tax then to increase by 27. Whereas the buoyancy ratio indicates that you'd maybe collect another 10 more in corporate income tax. So it's a very ineffective means, and a very it's a very complex means of tax collection. It's not monthly. Yeah, but
got you. You're schooling us here, Lance, and this really does help for us to actually understand the environment. As you mentioned, a much smaller tax per pool, the buoyancy also in terms of GDP growth related to how much tax we can collect. So really brings about even more robust conversation and ideas to what it is we need to consider. Gentlemen, you both have been amazing sports in this conversation, helping us fully contextualize VAT, the various tax options that we have, and most importantly, the impact on South Africans as individuals, but also corporate as well. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you for having us.
That's Lance Callop, who's a leading tax expert and founder of Callop Tax Collective. Mervyn Abrams also joined us tonight, a program coordinator for the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.